Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets, a family podcast of pirates and penguins. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
So I wanted to start by talking about... Actually, I'm trying to turn the fan so that it's not blowing directly in the microphone, making it harder to edit later.
Okay. So,
behind the scenes. I wanted to start with actually something else behind the scenes. So as probably most of our audience knows, I do another podcast with Jimmy Akin. I do several with Jimmy Akin, but I do one called Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World, which is very popular and a lot of fun to make, and I really enjoy doing it. But we have an upcoming episode on something called the Cottingley Fairies. Have you ever heard of that?
Oh, totally. I read a book, an article. So I read a lot about it at one point.
And Arthur Conan Doyle is deeply involved in it and everything.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and it goes back over 100 years, actually just about 100 years, about these two young girls who claimed to have photographed fairies in the woods.
It's in the Victorian era.
Sorry, Edwardian, really. It's early 1900s. I think we're splitting hairs on Victorian versus Edwardian, but
okay.
In any case, so one of the things we do is with the show is I often will read passages of quotes, like, so that it's not just Jimmy talking the whole way. It gives him a break and it lets me kind of jump in and I'll read certain things. But we had some quotes from one of the girls, and Jimmy thought it would be fun if one of our girls read it, you know, did the narration of the girl's own testimony. And so I asked Isabella and she was game. So for the first time, we got Isabella on one of our podcasts. So that was fun. I think she had fun doing it.
You know, we keep talking about having her read some of their like pirate and penguin stories
on our podcast.
But we have never got around to actually recording it.
That's because we record this at 9:30 on a Sunday night and they're in their bedroom. But we do need to. Yeah. One of these days we're going to record that like Sunday afternoon or something
right.
like that. Yeah, that would be fun. I think we should totally do that. And Bella has always been game for doing it, so...
Yeah, she likes the idea of... She likes listening to the podcast, and I think she likes the idea of being on them, too.
Yes. Well, when we were talking about that girl who has the 12-year-old girl who has the podcast...
I know, I saw little lights going on in Bella's eyes, like, oh, I could do a podcast.
And she and I have talked about, like, what if we did a podcast, what would it be about, and that sort of thing. We haven't really settled on something, but it would be fun.
She likes the idea. She's not shy.
And they like the idea of participating in what I do for a living. They all do. They love this idea.
Take your kids to work day.
Yeah. Frankly, at some point, I want to teach them to edit podcasts.
That's not self-serving at all.
No, no. Here, you're doing that now. That would be great. So, yeah, she's doing so. That won't air until August. August? Or no, end of July. It's the fourth Friday in July, which is, there are five Fridays in July this year because July 1st is however it falls, but it's July 31st, July 24th is when it will be out. So subscribe to Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World if you want to hear that. Today and frankly, for the next several days, we've got thunderstorms coming through. We recorded during a thunderstorm a few weeks ago or a month ago.
I do not remember that.
Yeah, you could definitely hear a couple times when we hit the thunderclap on the recording.
Oh, really? That's cool.
When I was editing, I heard it. Like, oh, like at one point we both stopped and go, whoa, that was a loud one. Right now they've stopped. But we've had a couple of big storms the last few days.
We have.
Like Texas sized thunderstorms.
I know. It makes me feel like nostalgic for home. I mean, in Texas,
tornadoes and driving rain and lightning to blast things to bits.
I've never been in a tornado.
Austin is not actually a big tornado.
No, it isn't. But big thunderstorms are frequent in Texas, and they're very rare here. I mean, we get rain, but we don't get big thunderstorms. Like, and even when we have thunderstorms, they're kind of puny compared to Texas thunderstorms. Everything's bigger in Texas,
Everything
right?
Everything is bigger in Texas.
I mean,
yes.
Like today's thunderstorm was much more like a Texas one where you just have like flash after flash after flash and rumble after rumble that goes on for minutes. Like the kids were like, is that all thunder? All of that rumbling is thunder? Yes, all of that rumbling is thunder.
Even in Ohio, we had bigger thunderstorms than here. I remember the green flash thunderstorms in Steubenville.
Green flash?
Like green flash lightning. That's the apparently, I don't know. That's like, I wonder if that's true, if it's true or not, but apparently it's supposed to be like a sign of storm, like storms that could be tornado producing.
I thought it was when the clouds were greenish.
When the lightning would flash, it was at night. So the lightning would flash, you'd see the green clouds.
Oh,
yeah. I don't know. It was, someone said it. I didn't know if I believe it, but it was the type of lightning that went along the bottom of the clouds. You ever see that?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. You don't really get that here.
Mm-mm.
This is all.
I don't think it gets. You don't get enough mix of hot and cold.
Right. This is all inside the cloud or air to, or cloud to ground. It's, you don't get the crackling lightning along the bottom of the cloud. We have boring thunderstorms, but we have blizzards.
we do have boring thunderstorms.
Yes, but we have blizzards. So,
but you know, I have to say that the blizzards, actually, all of the blizzards I've ever been through in New England, kind of feel lame.
What?
Because
may I remind you of 2015?
Okay, even 2015, because I grew up reading Laura Ingalls Wilder, and The Long Winter has those like that amazing blizzard where Laura's like walking home from school and they get lost in the blizzard. They almost get lost on the prairie, and you can't see the corner of the house that's like 10 feet away.
I will interrupt you, and now I will say next winter you get to snowplow the driveway during storms because that is exactly why you don't. I'm out in it experiencing that is when snowplow, you know, snow blowing the driveway during the storms. That's what you're experiencing. Well, we do not get Nebraska style.
Dakota.
The Great Plains, Dakotas.
Right.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, that's kind of what I thought, like in my head, that's what a blizzard is. And so when I moved here, I'm like, well, when do we get to the point where you can't see like 10 feet in front of your face?
You do. You're inside the house. Like, you're never outside during the storm.
No, but I can see across the street. Like, you never get to the point where you can't see.
We've gotten to the point where you couldn't see across the street for the blowing snow and the. Yeah, we have. You don't remember it. But we also have hurricanes. So there. I mean, other places have worse hurricanes, but that's the thing about New England. We get it all.
Uh-huh.
We even have tornadoes. None of it is as big as all the other places.
It's not very big.
But we get all of it. The only thing we don't get is earthquakes. Well,
baby earthquakes.
We get baby earthquakes, but they don't count. You know, because
But the hurricanes do?
Oh, yeah. We've had bad hurricanes. Oh, yeah. Well, Sandy, by the way, that was not really a hurricane, but it was a superstorm. The infamous perfect storm. Of what year was that? 90s.
I have no idea.
96, whatever. You know, the one they made the movie out of.
Yeah.
Also like Hurricane Gloria, Hurricane Hugo, like all these hurricanes that came out the East Coast and wiped everything out. There were a few of those that we got hit pretty bad. So, we get bad hurricanes. You just haven't seen a bad hurricane aside from Sandy. I think you were here for Sandy, but yeah.
I don't remember Sandy.
Anyway, now we're way off of the thunderstorms. But we're supposed to have thunderstorms through the rest of the night. And tomorrow, and Tuesday, and Wednesday. So we're going to be sick of thunderstorms by the... But at least I don't have to water the garden.
This is true.
But before we got the storms today, you went with the kids on a Cub Scout scavenger hunt.
I did.
What was that?
Somehow I got roped into that.
Somehow you ended up with that one.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that happened. Somebody was busy eating breakfast or lunch or some
lunch,
meal.
Brunch.
Yeah.
They should invent a thing that's kind of half breakfast, half lunch, and call it brunch.
They should.
Anyway, uh-huh. Or Linner. So,
the Cub Scouts had a scavenger hunt, a big, long list. I don't even know where the list is, but... things like a license plate whose numbers add up to 12, and a fire hydrant, and an American flag, and a statue, and a cross, and...
A picture of your reflection, but not in a mirror.
And an out-of-state license plate. That was fun to get, let me tell you.
Because people are
like driving. I mean, we're in the middle of a pandemic. Thanks, Dan.
People. Well, so the list of things to find was came up by all of the den leaders and all that stuff together. And the way it worked is because you can't like take the license plate. Not like when I was in high school and we did these things.
I don't want to know.
Oh man, we had some really bad scavenger hunts when I was in high school. But including like a girl nobody knew that you have to convince her to come back with you to the collection point. We did that once. She okay. came with us. Different time. So
yeah, very.
But this one they had to take a picture of themselves with the thing being collected.
Yes.
And you had to maintain safe social distancing, wear masks and all that sort of stuff when necessary and all that sort of.
It wasn't really necessary.
Yeah. And then and then afterward, we would send the pictures into the Cutmaster Dan. And then later on, we had a Zoom pack meeting and we all looked at the pictures and had fun.
Was it fun?
Sure.
I did not participate in the Zoom meeting because I had already done 2 hours of scavenger hunt.
Zoom meetings with 8 to 10, 11 year olds.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how teachers did it all spring. No wonder why kids did. Anyway.
So, yeah, we had fun. We had to go to the church, which was the charter organization, because that was one of the requirements. We walked up and down our street and we said hi to a few neighbors. We like I said, we drove through parking lots. We went to the local state park looking for wildlife. We actually took a photograph of a squirrel, which we could probably have done in our neighborhood, but you know.
You went to Ames Knoll?
We did.
Oh, wow. I didn't know you guys went all the way.
We had to get a picture of a fire truck and a police car, so we went to the police and fire station
town safety building
is across the street from the church, which is the charter organization for the scouts. So we just kind of walked over there and like took a picture of the police car in the parking lot.
Yes.
Oh, do you know, we weren't the only people, because after we left, like I saw another scout heading that way. We also had to take a picture of a swan, and we had the same idea as another scout family who we saw stop and take a picture of a swan-shaped planter in somebody's yard. Yeah, we did that too.
Technicalities.
It was a swan.
It was a swan.
I mean, we could have like driven all over creation looking for an actual swan.
Yeah, there have been reports of swans on the town lake, but
we sort of drove by the town lake and kind of looked, but there's not really a great place to stop and look at the town lake. It's like
there's one like picnicky sort of fishing area.
But it's mostly just houses all around it.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, there's not a beach there. You wouldn't want to swim in it anyway. The swans probably have two heads. So,
probably. It was fun. So I went with Ben and Anthony and Lucy were the ones collecting. Ben came along for the ride and pretty much stayed in the car listening to his audiobook. But I guess he had fun on the ride.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And the older girls just hang out here.
Yeah.
They kibitzed in their room.
It was fun.
Whatever they were doing.
It got us out of the house and moving around. And we even got to the state park for a few minutes.
Right.
Nice. I think the people who are picnicking there kind of looked at us like we parked, got out of the car, walked for 2 minutes, then came back and got in the car and drove away again. Like, they're like, what were they doing? What?
Were they burying a body? No, I don't know.
No bodies.
That went dark. So, good. That's fun. So we didn't really do much else this week. I realized the other day that apart from going, where I went out to, well, so we went to the farmer's market this week, but apart from the farmer's market, I don't think I left our yard, like our home, all week. Like I realized that like on Friday. I'm like,
You've been outside.
I've been outdoors, but I haven't gone anywhere. I haven't gone to a store or anything. I mean, it's just weird. This is like I do that in the winter. You know what I mean? In the winter, right. You don't go anywhere. But like in the summer, we go places.
There's nothing open.
Oh, nothing open. You can't go anywhere. Although our talk about small town news, our local neighborhood convenience store is open again.
They've been under construction since last spring.
Yeah, they renovated. They went from being a tiny convenience store to being a mobile station with attached store. Very exciting.
It is very exciting.
Actually, it's kind of cool to have a gas station closer than usual.
Right. Let's see, what else did we do this? Oh, I remember. I took Isabella to the orthodontist, which was an exciting adventure.
The new protocols.
Right. So the new protocol at our orthodontist is you call them, you have a form to fill out on your phone ahead of time, like a questionnaire. And then when you get to the parking lot, you call them and then they like tell you when it's okay to come up.
They'll text you to come up.
Yeah. And then I waited in the car. Like, I walked Isabella in because she wasn't sure actually which floor the orthodontist was on, and she was afraid of getting lost. She can never remember. So I did walk into the building with her, but then I went and sat in the car while she got her stuff done. Yeah.
Which, again, I think we mentioned before, she's supposed to have her braces off already. They were supposed to come off in May.
Yes. So now she is scheduled to have her braces off finally in August.
Good. Poor thing.
Yeah, so it's been a long haul, much longer than it was supposed to be. And I mean, they're doing like really safe. Like, they took her temperature and everything. And, you know, we had to fill out a questionnaire saying that she hadn't been sick or around anybody who was sick and all that stuff.
Yeah. So our big conundrum coming up is, of course, as we record this, 4th of July is coming up. And one of the things we've always done, like since before we were married, I think we were doing this, was going to my brother's house for 4th of July.
I don't think it was before we were married.
Maybe it wasn't. But ever since we've lived south of Boston near them, we've gone for 4th of July. That's right, because we were talking about when we were first married, we did the Salem 4th of July, which is one of the best small town 4th of July celebrations anywhere.
It is.
It was. Until we couldn't do it anymore. But we and my brother he's the one with the pool, and he has always has like 150 people at his 4th of July party. And I don't know what his plans are this year. They haven't actually said what they're planning on doing.
I'm not sure they
or even if they're going to do anything.
Right.
Or if it's just they're planning on just having family over or a few of the people they usually invite or what. But we've been thinking, like, what do we do? Like, if we're invited, should we go? And I think if it's just family, if it's us, my sister Evie and her family, my brother Bernie, do we go? We've already been around all of them.
I know. I don't know.
So one of the things is was it last week where we went over several times, and one day we went over and it was supposed to be just my sister Evie, my sister Francesca, and my mom and my dad and Evie's kids. And then we got there and I found out that Evie had invited a couple of her friends and their kids. And when I questioned it, because, you know, Massachusetts, wherever you are, that's fine. But Massachusetts was a high infection state. Like, it was bad. I mean, it's gotten much better. But it was, you know, and my parents are elderly, and I don't want to take a risk with them. And so I said, why, you know, why invite? Oh, they'll keep their distance. They won't. Well, they didn't. You know, they came up, they stood right next to my mom and my dad, they chatted with them, da, 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 and I could hear them talking, and they were kind of poo-pooing the idea of being infectious and being, you know, fast and loose with, you know, how bad things are, the crazy conspiracy theories and things. So I just don't feel confident.
I'm not comfortable with that.
I'm not, right, like, everybody's going to make their own decisions on how comfortable they are with how strict they want to be with things. I get that. And if people want to be looser or stricter with their way they do it, that's their decision. But, you know, for us, in our family, we have several people who have breathing issues, have disease related to breathing issues. Getting this sickness would be very bad for them. And we've got to be careful about it. I mean, I'm in a high risk factor group myself. So, we've got to be careful. So I think for the first time in a long time, I mean, none of the kids can remember a year we didn't go to Uncle John's for 4th of July.
Yeah. And I'm sad.
Yeah. So we get to listen to our neighbor's bootleg fireworks or the illegal fireworks.
Although I think the neighbor who used to do the excessive fireworks is no longer
on the backside.
Yeah.
He's long gone. They're long gone. That was the guy I had to yell at one year when the kids were little and he was, hey, the week of 4th of July, go for it. That's something you got to like as a, you know, you just deal with the fireworks are illegal in Massachusetts, but people do it anyway. But when it's May 30th, August 1st. I think we're beyond the season of 4th of July fireworks.
Right.
And when I have a 2-year-old and she's crying,
she's terrified.
Terrified and unable to go to sleep because your idiot neighbor is shooting up fireworks behind your house. I went over and yelled at him. It was that guy. But he's been gone for a while. And or if he's not gone, they haven't done it since. But there are some neighbors down the street, and we talked about this last year, who do a display. You know, they shoot off fireworks, and they actually look kind of cool. And I don't mind those so much. That's fine. But maybe that's what we'll see this year. And also the Boston Pops are doing a audience-less concert and fireworks display this year, so that should be interesting.
I suppose we could watch the Boston Pops.
Watch it on TV. That's what we did a lot of times when I was a kid.
Maybe watch some, like, patriotic movies and have like a movie day or something.
Yeah, like Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Raiders of the Lost Ark is a patriotic movie?
Defeating the Nazis while saving the Ark. Everyone in the audience who thinks that Raiders of the Lost Ark is a patriotic American movie,
I mean, I love,
raise your hand.
I mean, I love Raiders. I just it's not what leaps to mind when I think patriotic movie.
I'm kind of messing with you a little bit.
Okay, yeah, right.
There are not enough Revolutionary War movies.
This is very true. There are not enough Revolutionary. I mean, but you know what's coming out on July 3rd?
Hamilton.
Hamilton.
Oh, is this the patriotic movie we're thinking of?
Well, I'm not going to wait until July 4th to watch Hamilton. I'm thinking, but I don't know. There's got to be, well, there should be something.
Can anyone name a patriotic, like, Revolutionary War movie? I mean, there are plenty of patriotic movies. Revolutionary War movie, The Patriot.
The Patriot, Mel Gibson, period. That's it.
Thanks for playing.
1776, the musical.
There are not enough patriotic movies. Like, Revolutionary War movies. They need to be made. Hollywood, listen to me. So let it be written.
I mean, there's so many great stories of the revolution. Why has Hollywood not done
that? I don't know. It's kind of crazy. It's wild. I mean, there's been a few things, like there was the AMC series called Turn, based on the book about Shakespeare.
Right.
Washington's, not Shakespeare's, Washington's spy ring.
But I think that was not exactly family friendly.
No, it's not family right. friendly. But it got kind of soap opera-ish after a while. But
and then there was the John Adams miniseries, also.
There were parts that were not family
parts
friendly.
That were definitely not family friendly.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Especially the parts in France, especially.
Yeah, that got a little bit crazy.
But we actually have to finish watching that. After the
France episode, I kind of was like, do we really want to keep watching this? This is getting a little bit much.
I think we come back from France. France? So, with the reference.
Yeah.
So a patriotic movie. If anyone has a suggestion for a good family-friendly patriotic movie.
American Tale? Fievel the Mouse?
How is that more patriotic than Raiders of the Lost Ark? I'm not sure I'm on the, it has American in the title. Gosh, I remember that watching that as a little kid in the theater. We'll have to think of something. Some John Wayne thing. The Longest Day. We'll get into actually a movie, a World War II movie I just watched in the reading and watching segment. But that's what we've been doing anyway, or planning to
right.
do. Speaking of things that we're learning, just want to mention Bella's taking a new online Shakespeare class.
Yeah. So one of my Facebook friends.
Local?
Not local. She's okay. In California, actually.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
She's a fellow UD alumna.
University of Dallas.
University of Dallas. Thank you. And we have a lot of mutual UD friends in common, even though I don't actually have met her in person. But she runs a Shakespeare Academy out there in California. I can't remember. I think she's maybe in the LA area, maybe San Diego. Anyway, obviously, right now, they're still not open for business. And so she's been trying to find ways to, A, do more Shakespeare, and B, makes, you know, help make ends meet. So she had moved her Shakespeare classes, her local Shakespeare classes, online when the shutdown order happened in California. And she said, I bet I have other friends whose kids would like to do an online Shakespeare class. So it's sort of a class, I guess. But they're reading through a play. Right now they're doing The Tempest. And, I think it's going to be like 3 2-hour sessions
mm-hmm.
On Zoom. a bunch of teenage kids, mostly homeschooled kids,
they read the parts, discuss it.
They read it and they discuss it. They have scenes, and I think she had it like a sort of slightly edited script that she sent out to all the kids that they could like follow along with to make sure they were all in the same book.
That's cool. I know Bella's been enjoying it.
She has. I mean, Bella loves Shakespeare.
Yeah.
We inculcated that early. And she and Sophie really, they love sitting around and reading the Shakespeare Star Wars out loud.
Yes.
So she has a lot of experience actually reading Shakespearean
Elizabethan language. Well,
type language.
Not to mention how all the kids have enjoyed the Shakespeare at the Globe videos, the movies that we have.
Yes. Excellent. Excellent. By the way, if you're looking for good Shakespeare to watch, the Globe Theater in London has a whole bunch of videos available online. You can purchase them and stream them. They're also available on DVD. So there are plays that are filmed in the reconstructed Globe Theater, which is made to look as much like Shakespeare's original theater as possible. And so the staging really takes advantage of the
way Shakespeare wrote the plays for that theater. So therefore,
except for the plays he didn't, but
right. Well, but
but yeah, they were written for that space. And so seeing them acted in the space with the audience and seeing the way the actors interact with the audience. And it's really cool.
Shakespeare should be seen. It really should be. I mean, like the way we do Shakespeare in high school English classes,
it's totally backwards.
It's really bad. Yeah. It's totally not the way it should be done.
Right. Shakespeare should be read. I remember my English major self in college having an argument with one of my drama major friends who insisted that Shakespeare should not be read. It should only be seen in performance. And I'm like, no. Shakespeare should be read. It's legitimate. I still think that Shakespeare should be read. But first and foremost, Shakespeare should be seen.
Right.
Yeah, the reading, the analysis, that's really, really secondary. And that's for like geeks like me. But that shouldn't be the primary way that we introduce kids to Shakespeare.
I would also say that it's more comprehensible. The Elizabethan English is more comprehensible when you're seeing people act it out, because now you have a context that helps you understand what they're saying versus someone just reading it off a page like we do in high school English classes.
Right. I mean, the high school English classes sort of like you first struggle through reading the play, and then maybe if you're lucky, you get the bonus performance at the end to cap off the fact that we've studied this play. And that's kind of backwards. Like,
right. Watch it first. Watch then it first. Read it.
Right. Although actually what we do is we first read a retelling of it in simpler language.
A simplified version.
Right. It's not like a play, but like a narrative, like a story form. And there's a lot of really good adaptations of Shakespeare for kids. The Charles and Mary Lamb did it first, and then Edith Nesbitt did one, and there's a whole bunch of modern retellings too. Bruce Coville and Geraldine McCochrane, and get those if you want to do Shakespeare with your kids. Get a good retelling, read the story so that they have an idea of who the characters are and what the plot is, and it's an interesting story. And then watch it, and then maybe like have them act out some scenes or something.
Cool.
If they like it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So let's talk about food and cooking and move on to we have not been
doing anything
really new.
No.
We've been making teriyaki chicken again on the grill and stuff. Grilling over the next few days is going to be non-existent.
I know. I didn't really pay attention to the weather forecast when I was doing the grocery shopping last week. So I bought a lot of stuff for the grill. I'm not sure how this is going
to
work.
Yeah, we may have to adapt here over the next few days.
We may have to go back to the grocery store.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, we could do something with the chicken breast and maybe like curry or something like that. Or, because it's only Monday, Tuesday, and maybe Wednesday. Wednesday is sort of Wednesday says afternoon thunderstorms and showers. So maybe 3 days, but after that, we should be good. But we did a couple of things. So we did. What was it the other day that I cooked in the cast iron skillet on the grill? Was that the peppers and onions?
The potatoes?
Potatoes, right. And it wasn't so much like I want to talk about a recipe for potatoes. It's just potatoes. But the idea of cooking on the grill on cast iron. Like grilling doesn't just have to be stuff on the grate. like putting a cast iron skillet on the grill to cook stuff.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I think you can, like, because then, A, you're not heating up the kitchen.
Yes, I'm a big fan of not heating up the kitchen.
And B, you get the smoke of the grill and that in that aspect of it, and that direct heat. And the cast iron is great because it can, you can put that right in the fire. It doesn't hurt it. And it retains the heat. So when I bought...
In fact, if anything, that cast iron pan was kind of in a bad shape. It was starting to rust out because it hadn't been used and it got some water in it.
Right.
And cooking over the grill with lots of oil actually seemed to have helped to re-season the pan.
That's the thing. Cast iron, the way you maintain cast iron is use it.
Right. Cook with it.
Cook with it. That's how you maintain cast iron. So one of the things recently, so I had to get a new grill grate for this season. Our old one had gotten really gross. And so I got a new one. And the new Weber grill grates are the Weber grill system, which is, it has a an insert, like a central pot that you can pull out of the grill,
mm-hmm.
and it's this big hole, and you can put things in it. So one of the things I want to do is I want to use it to do stir fry with the wok. Just drop the wok in.
I'm all in favor of that.
They sell a cast iron wok, but I think we just use our regular wok. Yeah.
On the grill.
Because frankly, I think a regular wok, because it's thin, is actually better. That's, you want all that heat coming through.
Right. Well, in fact, when we toured the Chinese house,
in the museum, the PBD Essex Museum.
PBD Essex Museum.
Yeah.
The kitchen, it was an outdoor kitchen, and it had basically this stone hearth that had two holes in it. And basically, they were like built-in woks.
Right. Like the holes to drop a wok in.
Right.
Which is how Chinese restaurants work. They actually have these big fires that you drop a wok right on top of. Yeah, so that's how it should work.
Right.
But you can also drop in a cast iron griddle. Which I have with it now, so you can just put a cast iron griddle right in the middle, and even a baking stone, like a pizza stone or a bread stone, so we could cook bread over it. Like it gets really hot, hotter than our oven can get, even, I think. So we could cook bread in the grill.
How does that work?
You mean with the coals?
Right. So like just a regular loaf of bread, not like a flatbread.
Yeah, like you just like you would on a baking stone in the oven.
Okay, I want to try that.
It's essentially a bread oven, except it's not made out of brick or clay. It's a Weber grill, but you could take the coals, and what I would do is I would put the coals all around the outside, not directly underneath it, so as not to scorch it. But I would pile plenty of coals on the outside and get them nice and hot, really good. And so it gets up to 500 degrees, and then cook it right on top of the pizza stone, the baking stone, right in the middle.
Okay, I want to try that.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking before when we did that. So yeah, but you can make pizza on it. But you know, you could do that too. So I wanted to talk about like this, the new grilling thing. So the stuff we're planning on doing. We also had a special treat. It's been 6 months since we had lobster, living in New England, and there's a requirement that you have your fill of lobster every 6 months. Did you know that?
I did not know that did I become a New Englander?
You
I don't know.
You became a legal resident of New England.
I suppose I'm a legal resident of New England.
You've only been here 20 years. I think you've still got a few years left.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm really a New Englander yet.
Have you renounced your citizenship?
My kids are all New Englanders, though.
Yes, they are. No, because all the restaurants have been closed and people aren't going on vacation, there's a glut of lobster and other shellfish in the system, that sounds really bad. In the restaurant, in the harvesting flow, and so prices are dropping, and so it's a good time to buy shellfish, and lobster and other things like that. So, and it's going to go even cheaper, I think they were saying. We're doing our part in helping the
lobster industry, yes,
which we picked up from the regular vendor at the farmer's market. Our farmer's market has a lobster vendor.
We do. Our farmer's market has two seafood vendors.
Yes.
There's
Jordan Brothers. Mm-hmm.
Who,
they don't do lobsters.
But they do shellfish. You can get mussels and clams and scallops.
And they do fish. They do regular fish, too. And then C&C, which we got it from, they do lobsters and other shellfish. But they also do regular fish, too, as well.
And these are, like, you're buying from the people who, like,
Yeah,
who catch the lobsters?
Catch them, or just got them off the docks off a boat that yesterday.
Right.
Yeah, this is fresh fish. Yeah. So yeah.
But I talked to the CNC people. Like they.
Well, they catch their own.
They catch their own lobsters.
Yeah. No. They do. I'm thinking of the other fish that they.
Oh no! But the lobsters, like we're buying from the people who catch the lobsters.
Yeah, like the lobsters we ate on Saturday were in the water on Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably. But so we got a whole bunch of them. It's really fun to see. So I have to take them out of the shell for let's see, Anthony and Sophie and Lucy. But Ben and Bella both wanted to do their own, which is good. I'm very proud of them that they're stepping up to do it themselves. Hopefully the others will come along. They like to watch and see how I do it, and
they try to do little bits and pieces
of
it.
Yeah, definitely. So it's fun. I like doing it. I wish I could do more with them, not least because I would get to eat more lobster. Totally self-serving. That's our food for the week. Well, hopefully we'll get something new over the next week.
I made a cheesecake.
You made the another cheesecake. That was good.
That was good. Wasn't quite as good as the last time, though.
No. I mean, it was good, but it was thicker. And I think maybe it was too hot, the oven.
The oven was definitely too hot.
Right. And
I had cooked bread earlier the day, and I think that the oven hadn't cooled off enough. Also, I didn't feel like it was as limey as I wanted it to be. It was supposed to be a key lime cheesecake, and it didn't really have a very strong lime flavor, and I don't know why.
Yeah, that's interesting. Maybe the lime that you used wasn't all that limey.
I mean, I added extra zest, too. It was like the zest of two limes plus some frozen lime zest. So it was like the zest of three limes. You would think that would be limey enough. I don't know.
But did you do it by the dark of the moon with an eye of a newt?
Evidently not.
Bring me the zest of three limes. That sounds like something like that. So that's what we've been eating. And so we've got like a pork roast that you got, maybe some pulled pork this week.
Oh, yeah, I can do that. That pulled pork in the Instant Pot does not heat up the oven.
Yes.
Although I do like it when it kind of crisp it in the under the broiler a bit.
And that is an indoor one we could do. It's going to be cooler this week, so I mean the highs over the next few days is going to be in the mid 70s, so it's not going to be too bad. But let me think. I'm trying to think. Maybe I'll make a Carolina style barbecue sauce with that, like a mustardy or vinegary.
Wait, did you just say Carolina style?
Yeah.
You
don't have to eat it. I just want to try. We've got the leftover homemade barbecue sauce from the ribs, too.
All right.
I just want to try some new thing, just to try it. We'll see. And then we'll
one of these days, we have to cook Scott chicken.
The Scott family chicken? You will have to reduce the recipe from serving 48 people at once.
Right. So my granddad was from Kentucky, and the family recipe I got from my uncles was my granddad's recipe that who knows, it's like old family recipe.
It's like 100 years old.
It starts with like a pound of lard and like a gigantic jug of vinegar and an entire box of cayenne pepper. I mean, this thing is it's crazy.
So maybe for a
4th of July
party or whenever the next family pool party is, we could do a big batch of Scott chicken. The problem is it's spicy. So you and I and Sophie and Anthony might, you know, you and I would eat it. Sophie and Anthony would have some of it, and nobody else would have it.
Bella and Ben might try it.
He'll try it, but he won't eat.
He won't eat much. Yeah. No.
But for a party, that might be good. When we can do such things again, as has become the catchphrase of the 2020. When we can do those things again, we'll do that.
Stupid 2020.
Yeah. Now all I'm thinking of is Barbara Walters saying, "This is 2020. Anyway.
Nobody's made that joke before.
Oh, I'm thinking of a funny meme that would be like an animated GIF of like the bad things in 2020 and then ending with Barbara Walters just saying, "This is 2020. Anyway. So let's move on to the things we've been reading or watching. You've got a couple of things you've been reading. You mentioned that a book that you mentioned before that you want to talk about again.
Right. I'm at that stage I get to occasionally where I'm reading like a dozen different books.
Switching between them.
Reading like a chapter here and a chapter there. Most of them are nonfiction. And so I have a hard time just sticking with one nonfiction book. So I tend to like read a bit and then go on. So one of the nonfiction books that I'm reading is Bright Earth, about the history of chemistry and of art But looking at the chemistry of it, like paints and pigments and colors, it's really fascinating. The second chapter was a little bit dry because it was the heavy on the chemistry and physics chapter. My eyes kind of glazed a little bit there. But now I'm back into reading about the art history, like what did the Greeks and color theory. And it's great. It's like science and art all mixed up together.
Mm.
I love it. I'm also reading, let's see, a book about the Silk Roads, a book about Wilding, a book about British naturalists returning a farm to the wild.
Post-World War II.
Well, yeah. It's current, actually, right now. It's a project, but but it starts off with a sort of history of agriculture post-World War II, how they during the war, they plowed under all the
wild lands, so that they could grow all the food that they needed.
And it sort of was the beginning of industrial farming in England, but how that's sort of destroyed the ecosystems, and this farm was, like, about to hit bankruptcy, like. And they decided to do something radical, which was to return it to the state of nature, including, like, trying to get back to, like, before it was ever cultivated by man. So they brought in cows and pigs and horses because, like, in the wild, you get roaming bands of, like,
wild animals
that churn up the earth and like,
right.
graze it and move, like,
and fertilize it.
So they were trying to say, like, what could be closest to what was the ancient megafauna in England before, you know, agriculture existed.
Interesting.
It's fascinating. I'm a little bit mystified by, like, how do they make this, like, they said the farm was undergoing bankruptcy. How did they make this pay?
Right.
How is returning the farm to the wild?
What is the economic benefit of
an economic not benefit?
Anymore? Yeah.
Right? I mean, are they getting a grant somehow or some, like?
I would think that would have to be part of it. Is somebody, whether it's a government grant or some private conservation group, somebody's got to be subsidizing farms to return to conservation land, to natural.
Right. But I haven't got to that part of the book yet, so I'm still mystified. I'm also reading a memoir by Rosemary Sutcliffe called Blue Remembered Hills. She's the one who writes all of the amazing historical fiction.
We've mentioned
Eagle of the Ninth.
Times, yeah.
We've mentioned before in other of her novels. So this is her memoir of her childhood. Evidently, she had arthritis as a child, like really, really bad. And she spent a lot of her childhood sickly and in bed. And so it's very funny, very witty, and kind of an interesting story. Her dad was in the Navy and she traveled all over. She lived in Malta for a while. And then, so for fiction, I'm going back and forth between two novels, which are both kind of sad and depressing.
Okay.
White Tears is a novel, it's a contemporary novel about a guy who sort of digs into, it's about music, it's a mystery, like there's murder and death and ghosts and hauntings. It's very interesting. But I'll probably talk about more about that when I finish it. And then I'm reading a book called
A Little
Lower Than the Angels. I always get the title wrong, which was why I had you write it down.
Right.
By Geraldine McCochran, which is a historical novel. It's a juvenile novel, so it's for kids, but it's kind of grim and depressing for kids.
Hey, that fits right in with most young juvenile novels today.
So it's set in the Middle Ages and in England, and it's about what could possibly be the first troupe of traveling actors, players. So we know that drama in England started with mystery plays, which guilds of craftsmen would perform at festivals. Like there were set plays that they would memorize and put on for religious festivals that dramatized stories from the Bible. And at some point, some of those players decided to take the show on the road and travel from town to town. And those were the origins of the players, which eventually became, you know, Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. And then Shakespeare was at the time when those traveling players started to settle down and build playhouses and become theaters as we know them today.
Right.
So anyway, this novel follows a young boy who was an apprentice stonemason, and his master was mean and beat him and bullied him and drank too much. And he decides to run away with this group of players. And but the players fall on hard times. They're not very accepted in a lot of places. The guild members who are performing the mystery plays aren't very welcoming, and therefore, and some of the local clergy aren't very welcoming. So they get to a town where the bishop is angry at them, and the guild members are angry, and they burn up their wagons. And the leader of the players decides to become a charlatan, and so he fakes
con man.
He's a con man, like a snake oil salesman, basically, except he's selling miracles. So he has a guy pretend to be blind and then pretend to be healed.
And as the boy pretend to be...
The boy is playing the angel Gabriel in the play.
And so they're pretending that the angel in the play is...
is a real angel, and he's really healing people.
Uh-huh.
Somehow. And so they're going from town to town, cheating people. And at first the boy thinks that these are real miracles. Like he's a little bit naive, or a lot naive, really. And he thinks that they're real miracles, and it's amazing. Like, these miracles are happening, and it's wonderful. And the players who really aren't big fans of this scheme try to talk him out of it. But unfortunately, the guy who's most against the miracles con plays the devil. And so the boy, who is, again, very naive, thinks that he must be bad because he plays the devil.
Right.
And so he doesn't listen to him.
Right.
So, oh my goodness, it's just like, it's grim and it's kind of depressing. And I'm really hoping it has a good ending, because this is really hard. Like, the 14-year-old girl just like agreed to get married to the stonemason who showed up again, who's a drunkard, because she wants to somehow save her father. And I'm like, she's 14. No, this is horrible. Somebody stop it. I don't know. Why does it have to be depressing?
Why do all children's literature, like, for a certain age, have to be sad?
Well, the stuff that's written these days, I mean, we've read some very uplifting novels set in the Middle Ages, like A Door in the Wall or Adam of the Road. Those are great, and not nearly as depressing as this. I don't know.
So one other thing I want to mention is for watching what we've watched, we watched together over a period of time the Disney Plus Gallery series. So it's on Disney Plus. It's a behind the scenes of The Mandalorian, which sounds sort of like dry. It sounds like, oh, it's these behind the scenes. Like, you must have to be really into it, into The Mandalorian, to watch this. But,
well, maybe a little bit.
You have to be a little bit. You have to be a bit into Star Wars. But it was surprisingly good. Not just because it talked about The Mandalorian, but because it talked about sort of the philosophy of Star Wars. Like, it really reveals, and I think this was intentional, there's been controversy over the last, you know, ever since Disney bought Star Wars, that Disney doesn't get Star Wars. They're ruining Star Wars. Some people think, you know, Disney. And the best thing to come out of Star Wars in recent years was the animated stuff being run by this guy named Dave Filoni. Well, Dave Filoni is one of the two key figures, two key people behind The Mandalorian, him and Jon Favreau. I had thought of the name and I just slipped for a second. They're behind The Mandalorian, and The Mandalorian is a huge success. Everybody loves it.
It's really good.
It's
if
so
you
good.
Haven't seen The Mandalorian yet, go see it.
Well, yeah, get Disney Plus.
Get Disney Plus. It's really
now,
worth it.
Now you have the Mandalorian and Hamilton.
This is the time to get Disney Plus.
This is the time.
I mean, you don't have to have subscribe for forever.
If you haven't seen the Marvel movies, they're all there. If you can watch all the Star Wars movies, they're all on Disney Plus. Anyway, enough selling Disney Plus. Disney can send a check too. Never mind.
I wish.
But yeah, I know. I wouldn't mind having some Disney money. So, but Dave Filoni is a real fan. He was like me. He talks about, like, when he was a kid, after watching Star Wars, collecting the Kenner figures, you know, the Star Wars action figures, collecting the proof of purchases of those, and then sending them in to Kenner to get the exclusive Boba Fett action figure before Boba Fett was even in Empire Strikes Back. Like, this was a character who's going to be in Empire Strikes Back, so we hadn't even seen him yet. And if you collect all these proofs of purchases, and trust me, my mom did not buy a lot of Star Wars toys. It was not easy to get them. you could send it in, and you would get this action figure.
Why would you want a toy for a movie you hadn't seen yet?
Because he was cool. He had a rocket pack, like with a missile that shot out of it.
This explains to me what has always been a mystery, which is, why are so many people so in love with Boba Fett when he's like a totally forgettable character who I don't even remember from the movie?
Because
a great marketing scheme.
Great. Well, so he was in we first saw Boba Fett in the infamous Christmas holiday special,
which I had never even heard of until recently.
Oh, it's on YouTube. No, I subjected you to it. There was an animated cartoon in it, like a cartoon in it.
When did this come out?
Oh, 79.
Okay, so in 79, I was 5, yeah. So I was too young.
And it had Maud. What was her name? B. Arthur in it. I mean, it was like on TV. It was really bad. It's just so bad.
Well, Star Wars and Christmas just really shouldn't go together anyway.
It was Wookiee Life Day.
What? No.
Yes.
No.
It was all about Chewbacca going home for Life Day and bringing his friends with him.
For Life Day, but it wasn't actually Christmas.
It was holiday. It was the Star Wars holiday special. Because of course there's no Christmas in the
Star Wars. Of course not. There's no Jesus in Star Wars.
Because it predates Jesus. It's a long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. So anyway.
I always forget the long, long time ago because it feels futuristic.
Well, that's the whole point. Okay.
Anyway.
Let's back up. Because we're way
totally off.
We're so way off. So anyway, Dave Filoni is just like me, because he was talking in this. He was talking about like, oh, I collected the things. I got the Boba Fett. It was really cool. But he gets Star Wars like George Lucas's original vision, not the stuff he did
we're going to pretend like that never happened
when he was messing with stuff. But like just the vision of it and what it's about and how it's good and what it makes us feel as fans and what it means to us. And you get the sense watching this 8 episodes behind the scenes thing.
I did not watch all.
You didn't watch
episodes.
All of them, but you watched the several that were really the key ones.
I only watched one.
I thought you might watch the one with where they showed how they did the technology, how they filmed it.
No, you told me about it.
Oh, okay, maybe. Yeah. Anyway, so there's one episode you didn't see, where the last 10 minutes is basically the Filoni kind of elucidating from A New Hope through all of the movies, including the prequels that weren't very good, but he's a fan, through the current movies and into The Mandalorian, how it all, the philosophy that all draws it together, a philosophy of hope and of belief in yourself and in faith and in family. I mean, I was like ready to stand up and cheer at the end of it. It was one of the best summarizations of what makes Star Wars great that I'd ever heard. And the fact that this guy is in charge of making a lot of it right now, it gives me hope. It's a new hope. So, and then the last episode of the season was showing how they incorporated, basically it was how they did fan service and Easter eggs throughout The Mandalorian. All these great things that they grabbed from all of Star Wars history and just kind of brought it into this series to make it feel like Star Wars.
And I have to say, okay, I am not the Star Wars uber geek fan that you are.
Of course.
But
who is?
But no one, right?
Anthony.
Possibly. I like Star Wars. I haven't actually seen the original movies in ages. But I enjoyed watching it because in the same way that I really enjoy watching anybody talk about something that they're passionate about, which is when you get somebody who is passionate about a subject, their passion is infectious. And a truly passionate person can make anything interesting.
Right.
Like a truly passionate person can make microbes and viruses interesting because they're passionate about it and that's infectious. Yep. And so I felt like this had that it of watching somebody who's really interested in something, a group of people who are really interested in something, talk about it, and it's something that I like, and it was enjoyable.
Yeah, it was really good. I recommend it. I recommend the whole thing, but there were several of those episodes. One of the best parts of that last episode was how they needed more stormtroopers.
That was the best
for
part.
One of the episodes, and they only had about 30 extras, and so they went to the 501st Legion, which is a fan group of people who dress up in in stormtrooper outfits. They make their own stormtrooper outfits and they dress up at charity events.
Their outfits look like they're right from the movie. These are high quality.
Right. Well, you're not allowed to wear, you're given help when you join the group, and you're not allowed to wear it in any of their events until it's been approved. I mean, they're very strict. They're often used by Disney before that Lucasfilm to be present at charity events or movie premieres or other things like that, or corporate events where they need stormtroopers or, you know, that sort of stuff. They also have like a rebel auxiliary and all that sort of stuff too. But so they needed these troopers, more stormtroopers. So they said, they've never done this before, but they said, let's get the 501st. And so they got a bunch of them who didn't know what they were doing. They thought they were doing a party or corporate event. Yeah. And they show up on a bus that drives onto the set, and they're like, and there's Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni, and everybody, you know, if you're a Star Wars fan, you know who Dave Filoni is. And they're like, yeah, guys, so here, sign here. You're going to be extras in the scene. And like, they were,
and this
imagine?
Is before anybody had even seen The Mandalorian.
Right, right. I mean, could you, like, I cannot imagine what it would have been like to be one of these guys. They were freaking out. And it was so funny because when they had the helmets off, they're like, there's a dentist, there's like a mom who looked like your mother.
I know, she
daughter.
Was like total, like, just like a mom.
It's just like somebody's mom.
Right.
Under that stormtrooper outfit.
And when I watched that episode of The Mandalorian again.
Yes.
I'm totally going to be picturing, like, that stormtrooper's a mom. I'm right. sure of it.
Well, and they were naturals because they knew how to hold they knew how to move. They knew how to hold the blasters. They looked good. They looked because they were used to it. And the best part was, like, Dave Filoni was saying, the holy grail of being one of these people is to have screen used props as part of your uniform, your outfit. If you've got something that was in one of the movies as part of your costume, that arm brace or the blaster or something, that's huge. And he's like, all of these guys, all of their outfits are now screen used. They're like
their entire outfit.
Like, some guy's going to come up like, you see this patch here? Yeah, this was in The Last Jedi. He's like, yeah, you see this whole outfit? This was on The Mandalorian. I mean, I just thought that was hysterical.
I loved the interviews with the 501st guys and how thrilled they were to be a part of The Mandalorian. It was really fun.
That was really good. So I recommend that. Speaking of Star Wars, I finished a book called The Military Science of Star Wars. It's written by this guy who's a former Army artillery officer, and he's looking at Star Wars from the war's perspective. And I was kind of interested in seeing, like, what would a military guy say about the military aspects? Now, obviously, and he recognized, the movies are written not to be good strategy and tactics and to be, you know, necessarily believable strategy and tactics. They're written to be good dramatic narratives. I mean, they're a story to be told first and foremost. So, of course, they take liberties with strategy and tactics and stuff. But he says, for what's there, let's look at it. The book was okay. It was uneven. For one thing, there were a lot of basic factual errors. He kept referring to Empire Strikes Back as the movie with the second Death Star, which it's Return of the Jedi. Duh. And he was kept confusing Attack of the Clones and Phantom Menace, like mixing those up, the two prequels, as the Battle of Naboo. And it was just it undermined the book. But then it was also just, I don't know, there's a lot of stuff where it felt like it was, I'm trying to think of a specific example, but there were a couple of times where I'm like, one thing he looked at was Han Solo as a military guy. How does he stand up to that? Okay, that's pretty good. I mean, that was interesting. But Jar Jar Binks as a general at the Battle of Naboo, I'm like, obviously he wasn't like a... The rank was Bombad General. No, Bombad was an adjective. He is the big bad general, big tough general was the idea. It just felt like he was trying to shoehorn things together too much in areas. So some areas were really good. Other areas I felt like it was only all right. So that was one I read. And then I just watched a movie last night. Speaking of war movies and patriotic movies, I watched A Bridge Too Far. 1977 movie about World War II, Operation Market Garden, which was the operation where it was the largest paratroop operation campaign to history to that date. I don't know, probably still isn't, but to that day, I'm going to guess the Gulf War was actually the most recent biggest. And anyway, they dropped paratroop divisions on a bunch of rivers in Holland to seize the bridges so that when the Allies tank divisions came through, could go over the bridges before they would, the Germans could destroy them and then get Germany from the north or the northwest. Which it was it didn't work. It failed. Parts of it worked, but of course it was there was a bridge too far, which is hence the title. But it was a great movie. All the cast is amazing. Sean Connery, Anthony Hopkins, Gene Hackman, Ryan O'Neill, Robert Redford. Remember the guy from Raiders of the Lost Ark who was Indy's boss from the museum?
Yes. Oh, what was his name?
Oh,
I do not know.
Yeah, it's running the tip of my tongue. But he was in it. He had a small part. James Caan was in it. Elliot Gould. Really great movie. It's 3 hours long. I'd never seen the whole uncut movie before. The only thing I'd ever seen was on TV years ago when I was a kid, edited out, edited for time and for content. There was some, for 1977, it was kind of violent. But by today's standards, it was relatively tame. But such a great movie. I mean, so good. It's right up there with The Longest Day, which is another great movie. But it was interesting to see this movie from 1977, so 33 years after the events, the actual events, and then to think about we're now 40-something years from that. Just how, for a lot of these guys, that was within their lifetime.
Right, what was 30 years ago for us?
Gulf War I, Desert Storm.
No, that was more recent than
1990. It's 2020. That's 30 years ago.
No. Oh, my gosh. I feel old. I was in high school. Right.
So from that date to this battle in World War II is like from us to the Gulf War, the first Gulf War.
That's so weird.
Right. And so you can imagine for many of these guys, I think some of them were old enough even to have served, perhaps. I'm not sure. But very, very good movie. It's highly recommended. So many good parts to it. So that's what I watched.
Good.
So we're going a little bit long. So I want to talk a little bit about this week's mass readings. We are splitting mass still because we have a couple of kids who are still not quite ready to sit through mass with masks on for an hour in the heat. And so I let you go again this week with the kids, and I stayed home. We tried to watch the live stream, so our mass live streams it, and we tried to watch the live stream, and it cut out right before the gospel. That's what it was, right before he started reading the gospel. The broadcast stopped. I don't know if it ever picked up again.
He was messing with it later during mass, so I'm guessing he probably did get it working again.
Okay, so what we ended up doing is I went over to YouTube and started the Catholic TV recorded mass. I fast forwarded to the gospel when we picked up from there. So, but I'm glad we did because it was a good homily from the. I don't remember who the priest was on Catholic TV because we missed that part where he was introduced. But I first want to start with a question. The first reading is about the prophet who's in 2 Kings. Uh-huh. How do you pronounce his name?
Oh my gosh, I never know how to pronounce his name.
Is it
people say Elisha or Elisha or
it's when I hear Elisha, I think like Elisha as in Alicia Keys, like a woman's name.
Right.
Well, so the other prophet is Elijah. So why wouldn't this be Elisha?
That's how I usually say it.
It's Elisha.
Elisha. But I think people say it differently because it's so hard to distinguish between Elijah and Elisha. So they want to say it differently to make it more
But
recognizably a different name.
Turning him into a girl named Elisha.
Right. Which is, yeah.
Anyway, so the first reading is 2 Kings is Elisha, who a woman of influence, so probably also a woman of wealth, who has him dine with her when they, in her husband, when he visits, and because he visits them so often, they basically set up an in-law apartment for him. That's what it sounds like, right? He has his own little room at their house.
On the roof, right?
A room on the roof, which is actually that's actually a prime location.
Yeah, it's nice and cool, right?
Cool at night, yes.
Cool at night.
Yeah. With a bed and a table, a chair, and a lamp. That's a lot of furniture.
That's actually a sort of a wealthy person's furniture, not a poor person's furniture.
Right.
I noted that's for that time and place, that's a nice setup.
And so he blesses them with this. He's like, what can something be done for her? And so he asks, what does she need? And well, she has no son. Her husband is getting old. She needs, when he dies, she's going to need someone to take care of her. So they get her a son. And a year from now, you will be, I like the way this is, this time next year, you will be fondling a baby son. Not just you'll have a baby son.
I love that verb, fondling. It's so intimate and like you're playing with a warm, squishy baby.
I knew you would like that.
Yeah.
Not even just nursing, not even just caring for, but loving. It's that loving.
That loving, playful.
You will have a loving relationship with a son.
Right. And I kind of liked the servant who pops up. Like Alicia just sort of says, what can we do? And his servant answers, yes, we can do something.
yes.
And the servant seems to he's the wise servant who knows more than his master.
Well, a wise servant always is ready with an answer for his master.
I really liked that. And although our lector could not. Like, he was having a hard time with names.
Yes, he's the one who called her Alicia.
But he also mispronounced the servant's name, like, in a horrible...
Gehazi?
Yeah, he like, Gazati or something.
Yeah,
like,
and I'm
he
not
added
sure.
a, yeah. a, He added a consonant.
He was having some troubles today.
Oh, gosh.
He also said something not fondling with the baby. I don't know what the word was, but it was. I noticed at the time, like, he just kind of swallowed the word, I think.
Yeah, he didn't seem like he had prepared the readings very well.
Well, I think a lot of lectures don't read the readings ahead of time, frankly. You always got to read it out loud ahead of time. You just got to.
Yeah, you should do.
And then the gospel is when Jesus says to the apostles from Matthew 10, you know, whoever loves his father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Whoever loves their son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. Whoever doesn't take up his cross and follow after me is not worthy of me. Whoever finds his life will lose it. Whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. And then, you know, kind of talks about whoever receives you receives me. Whoever receives me receives the one who sent me. And so he talks about basically the things where you have to put Jesus in the ranking of things, and then how others, what gifts people will receive, what benefits we will receive if they receive you like they receive Jesus.
And our homily focused on the idea of receiving. Receiving the stranger in the same way that the rich woman in the first reading receives the prophet. How do we receive strangers? And he talked about how difficult it can be to receive a stranger into your home, to be hospitable.
Right.
Especially now, right now,
you can't be,
you know, he talked about like the fear that we have of strangers and how we have to overcome that fear in order to fulfill this commandment of receiving the stranger. It was very moving.
And you mentioned, he said it was Elisha's story echoes the hospitality of Abraham and Sarah, who, when they received the three angels, they were also rewarded for
their hospitality with a son.
Yes.
Which I really like that idea of like, when you receive God, you also receive blessings from him. When you're open to the hospitality to the stranger, it also opens you in a way to the hospitality of, well, really receiving any baby is receiving the stranger into your home, because
that's a pro-life message.
I think it was Chesterton who talked about like love begins in the family when these babies like show up like completely helpless, needy, crying, fussing strangers who need to be welcomed and loved and fed and clothed and everything.
Yeah.
And that's where we learn how to love strangers is, first of all, we learn how to love family. And then that love pushes us beyond to welcoming other people into our families.
You know, it's interesting how the woman of Shunem, that's where she was, the town she was in, this woman is kind of like Mary, too. She welcomes the Holy Spirit. She welcomes the Lord and then is rewarded with a son. She's
right.
Given a
right.
son.
Mary,
just
Mary
like,
is
like, yeah, this woman is a type to Mary's anti-type, like Sarah is a type of Mary as
and,
well.
And Hannah.
And Hannah. Right. So prefigures Mary and Jesus again.
Right.
Oh, once again.
Once again, Mary says yes, and she's rewarded with a son. She's
yep.
She welcomes angels, and then look where that look where that gets her.
So in the homily I heard on Catholic TV, the priest talked about the fine print of the kingdom of God. Like
the fine print.
There's no we're used to having fine print in the offers we get. You know, it's a free checking account, but you have to keep a balance of $3,500. You got to have the mortgage through the bank. You know, all these is always like everything comes with hidden costs, hidden clauses, hidden. And you got to be very careful to. Well, there's no fine print here. Jesus lays out the costs right up front. You have to love me more than your mother and your father and your sons and daughters.
Yeah, right.
You know, like there's no hidden, the cost of being a disciple is right there up front.
This is true. This is something actually we were talking about with the kids the other day. Like Jesus tells you right up front, if you're going to be my disciple, you have to pick up your cross.
Yep. We'll be willing to lose your life.
You've got to turn your back on you're willing to turn your back on your friends, your family. You have to be willing to lose
everything,
your property, your possessions, your life itself. If you want to be following him, you're going to get persecutions and sorrows and suffering. He's not promising us a rose garden.
Right. And there's no way you can get to the end of life and go to your judgment and go, well, that was a surprise. You didn't tell me that was going to happen. He can just point to the gospel and said, were you not paying attention? I was right up front with it. This is what it's going to cost to follow me. There's no surprises here.
Costing no less than everything.
Exactly. And then he said, he talked about that Jesus compares his... our relationship to him to the two highest relationships outside of that relationship with him. The two, you know, is our relationship to our parents and our children, family, mm-hmm. family relationships, and the relationship to ourselves, you know, give up your own life. So we have to be willing to sacrifice even the highest of relationships, the one that the preservation of our own life. That's the primary drive is survival. As well as family, the reproduction or the survival of ourselves and our legacy and passing on the two highest parts of being alive. Everything shares those drives, those relationships, but we're called to even higher. So it was very interesting. I thought it was a really good homily that he gave. If you're interested, you can see that on Catholic TV for the 13th. Sunday of Ordinary Time on their YouTube channel. But it was good. I thought he did a really good job with that. So I think we should wrap things up there. We've been blabbing a lot. Yeah. But so I do want to, as we do, I want to make sure we have plenty of time to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including Jeffrey J, Ben B, Christopher M, Dean S and Brent W. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets and all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. So let us know what you thought of our discussion. If you have any feedback for us, you can go to sqpn.com/bets. That's BETTS. Or the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. Or send an email to bets@sqpn.com. And of course, I'll put relevant links from our discussion in the show notes at sqpn.com, including links to the books and other things we discussed. Remember to like Raising the Bets on the StarQuest Facebook page, retweet us on Twitter where we're at SQPN, and be sure to leave us comments online in our social media. We love when you do that.
Yes, we do.
Until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.